Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Plankson.
And me, Ian Morris.
Tell me your news then. What have you bought?
What have I bought? Well, we were chatting before and I wanted to just maintain the suspense, didn't I? So that our showy listeners could enjoy this discussion.
Let me change to something more suspenseful.
That's a bit too suspenseful, to be fair.
All right.
I just bought a more expensive keyboard and mouse switching thing. A KVM is the official parlance, but it also switches HDMI. So now I'm able to use one keyboard and one mouse with three computers. I'm not being funny or anything, right? But it was quite hard to choose. Yeah, all right, fair enough. It was quite hard to choose this thing because obviously Amazon has a lot of things. Yeah. And they're all 5-star rated, mostly because they've been Vine reviewed.
I would like to remind everyone that, as per last week's reminder, we're going to be rudely interrupted. We are going to be rudely interrupted.
Like that.
By the government partway through today's show, because as we record, we are going to be bombarded with alerts, alarms, emergency warning system tests. And we're going to permit that live on air. So you will hear this first ever experience of a United Kingdom emergency alarm system at the very same time we do.
Might be the only tech podcast in the country that's offering this valuable service to listeners.
Valuable service indeed. Very, very valuable. In other valuable news, the news. Google said it's going to let developers in the UK use alternative payment options for buying stuff in the Play Store. This comes after the CMA, Competition and Markets Authority, which is a regulator here, concluded an investigation into its control of in-app purchases. Now, the FT's writer of this news mentioned that Google had said that its measures, if they were accepted by the CMA, meant that developers would be able to add an alternative in-app billing system. This would be alongside Google's ones, but only for UK users. It's going to roll out to all apps apparently by October, and it will at first be offered to developers who don't make gaming apps, non-gaming apps, which, I mean, a lot of the money, I'm pretty sure the lion's share of in-app purchases in the Play Store is for games. So that instantly cuts out a huge number of people to be initially. Google said developers can opt out of offering an alternative entirely. Now, but to be clear, this doesn't mean Google's not taking a cut of the sale of an in-app purchase. Google's got a baseline fee that's about 15% for the first $1 million in revenue.
Same as Apple, I think. Is that right?
Well, it rises to 30% for any annual earnings once you get above that. Apple and Google are very, very similar in this regard. Natasha Lomas, friend of, not so much friend of the show, but Ian and I used to work with her.
Lovely and talented journalist.
At TechCrunch now, said Google's proposals would extend the area, the choice of an alternate billing system that it's already offering in Europe, essentially, where Google's faced a lot of antitrust enforcements. South Korea has had one a couple of years ago as well. And India, relatively recently, I think, fined Google quite a lot for antitrust stuff last year. Now, the CMA also said that before it's reached a final decision on exactly how to implement this, it's consulting with the people that it's going to be most affecting, that is to say, developers. They want to figure out whether this is appropriate, whether it's good for third-party payment providers who are going to have to integrate into the store in some way, and the deadline for that is just under a month. It's in May. There is a Anne Pope, that is to say a woman called Anne Pope, not a grammatically incorrect way of describing the Pope, senior director of antitrust at the CMA, said Google's complete control over in-app payments raised concerns this unfairly restricted app developers. While we're pleased that our investigation has resulted in Google offering to give in-app payment freedom to thousands of app developers, we need to make sure these commitments will work in practice. So we welcome all feedback. Bloody, 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 blah. So there we go.
That's okay. I mean, that's fine.
Cool. So nothing else to say there. I mean, it's only a matter of time until Apple will get slapped with the same demand. It's already having to talk about it. I think Apple's already had to do it at least in Korea. And we're now talking about having to be able to sideload apps in future versions of iOS. Mm. So it does feel...
less keen on that, if I'm honest.
Yes, I am also less keen.
Here's the thing. It's fine. Apple is sort of inserting itself quite a lot in the payments industry anyway. So it feels like they're kind of, you know... they're positioning themselves in such a way as to benefit from people spending money on items. I mean, you know, they've just announced their own savings account in the US. They've got Apple Cash, I believe, for Americans as well, and yep. The Apple Card. These are all things that will help them become even more wealthy, no doubt, and will certainly help drive people to using their iPhones for more and more things. So I feel like there's a diversification here. That's not to say, as you said, it won't necessarily affect bottom lines anyway, because having a different payment processor is by and large irrelevant, really. It's a, you know, a relatively small part of it, so they will still be making money hand over fist from developers. But you know, that's the cost of doing business, right? It's not like shops stock things for free.
No, I mean, they're going to, developers may end up saving a little bit or keeping a little bit more of the money, because there's a few percentage points that Google will not require a developer handover in terms of...
Now, but here's the thing. My understanding with Apple, at least, is that when you, that 30% you pay, all the processing fees are rolled up in that anyway. So I assume the same is true for Google. So actually, does it really make any difference to anyone except payment processors?
I mean, I suppose the CMA's answer would be consumers. And if you didn't want to use Apple Pay or Google and you could instead use a PayPal account, that feels like a fairly good
alternative. I mean, I totally get what you're saying.
Which is weird, because actually... you can link Apple, you can link a PayPal account to your Apple.
You can
Apple
do pretty much anything. Thing. I mean, realistically, it's not really Apple doing very much at all in that regard, or Google. You know, that they have a front end, which is really just a way of allowing you to purchase things through your phone. It's not really, they're not processing payments. They're not doing the bit that is charged. They're not, you know, moving money around or anything like that. They're just a front end. So I find this minimal in its impact. I'm not sure I've spent a huge amount of time forcing it. I think different app stores is a much more gigantic decision, and the cost of the amount of percentage that Google and Apple take is a bigger argument to be had. This feels to me like a small thing, probably one of the reasons it's not met with much sort of negativity from Apple and Google.
Well, it's about data, really, isn't it? I mean, it's Google and Apple, and people want to be able to provide it in part because of the data. You know, if you know what people are spending and you know how they're spending it, it makes it slightly easier to you know, promote other stuff to them. There are many, many other ways, probably many, many more effective ways, because as you say, it's not Apple and Google themselves who are personally processing these things. It's the back-end payment providers. And it's not even like PayPal. It's people like Adyen, you know, who are actually the behind the people who are behind the scenes, essentially, facilitating all this stuff.
Yeah. And then you've got, you know, other companies behind that that are actually moving money around.
Yeah.
Anyway, we don't need to go into the minutiae of... how payments work, but you know, it is interesting. But
it is, I think we're going to see more of this. You can see
probably.
This is the slow but steady unraveling of some guardrails that these companies have had up for, you know, 15 years at this point, really, the control of app stores is going to be looking very different in 5 years' time, I reckon.
But Mark in the chat says their longer-term intent
Oh, good God, here we go.
Oh, it's happened. Well, only
oh,
for
panic,
you, it seems.
Panic! Panic! Ah!
I've got
good
nothing.
Good God, how the hell do I turn this... This is a test
oh,
of it.
No, here we go. I've got out. It too. How exciting.
Good God. Off.
God, it's really annoying, isn't it? Go yeah. away. Good
how
God.
That is unnecessarily loud. Hang on. This is a
and
test
actually,
of emergency alerts, a new UK government service that will warn you if there's a life-threatening emergency nearby, in a real emergency, blah, 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 blah. So the text is exactly the same as we had last week. But it said... So how do I disable it? Oh, if you press settings, it takes you to emergency alerts and a little toggle switch to turn it off. Just do that now. Done. Thank you.
Right. The good news is that did work on my phone with it disabled. So unless there's a nuclear strike, I won't have it. It was loud.
That was very Kate, loud.
Kate in the chat said. Yes.
And fair play, bang on three. Exactly when
sort
they said
of,
it would.
Yes. It was 1 minute before, I think.
God. Right. Well... Hopefully that won't happen again, ever.
Yeah. This is my argument with it, is that whilst it shouldn't happen again until, you know, something bad happens,
yeah.
I have a feeling that it'll be reminding us to, you know, pay our taxes or something before too long.
Well, Luna in the chat room says she's not got anything yet, but I wonder if that's because she's not in London and the government doesn't care as much about people who aren't in London.
I don't think it works like that, mate.
Marta also in the chat.
Oh,
I got mine
hello,
on my US phone, not my main UK number. Interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Captain Kremen says one out of three here. I assume he means three phones in the vicinity. Got it.
Wonder.
Oh, got it. It's on my watch as well.
Is this the sort of thing where it doesn't actually need a SIM card in it to work somehow? Is there like, I don't know how that would happen. I haven't got another phone that's not registered. It would have been a good idea to have a phone that's not actually registered. I can charge this maybe other phone and see if it picks it up. Does this alert stay active
until you
turn
interact.
Your phone on next?
Yeah.
So if I turn a phone that's been off on, it will actually happen.
Okay, Luna has now got hers, so that's a couple of minutes later.
That's sad because some people might not be able to act in that minute. We could be seeing massive loss of human life.
Yeah. You're right to laugh, mate. That is very funny.
I mean, I don't mean it's funny that there'd be massive loss of human life. I'm laughing at the fact that it's stupid.
Yeah. Nick still hasn't got it. Charlotte still hasn't got it. It seems there's some there's no guarantee that you're going to get it. It'd be very interesting to see, and we'll come to this next week, I'm sure, why what the reason is for some people not getting it. Mark says no one's freaking out around the shops. Elderly booksellers in the shop I was in were expecting it. John says it was like a sci-fi film here, though. Everyone on the street reached for their phones at the same time. I bet that was interesting. Good question. I don't know. It's not in this room with me, but Kate will put it in the chat, I'm sure. If sure. Yeah, Charlotte says it's like when you're using BeReal. Although I heard on DTNS that fewer people than ever are using that platform these days.
I don't know what BeReal is.
I think that's because you're older, maybe. I think is it a young
only cool
a young,
people use it. Thanks, Charlotte. That's awesome. Yeah, I'm not cool. That is true.
Very interesting. God, I wasn't expecting it to be quite so varied in who got it and how they got it. I mean, Marta got one on a non-UK number.
My teeth have all fallen out and my arms are aching.
But I don't think it's anything to do with the alarm, is it?
It's just age again, isn't it?
Yeah. My daughter's phone had run out of data and didn't receive it. Is the government aware of that, I wonder? I mean, that's interesting because it's not tied to a phone number. It's tied to the device. And so presumably, yeah, it uses data, not cellular. That is interesting.
That seems
Nick hasn't run out of data, so it might not be that.
Because having run out of data wouldn't prevent them sending you the relevant packets, would it?
No, true. Well, I suppose you could send it over cellular without the data. I don't know. We'll have to break that down next week and figure it out. Break it down like an enzyme.
You would imagine, wouldn't you, that this would be a system that would be designed to work for people without data, because otherwise what's the point of it? You know, you can't exclude people just because they've run out of data. Like, the alert system has to be a layer that's distinct from regular data. Otherwise, what's the point?
Well, I think we've talked about this enough this week. For anyone who didn't listen to last week's episode and is wondering what the hell we're on about, then go back and have a listen to last week's show where we talk about what this alert is actually for, why it's happening, why it's being tested, and some of the background chatter is happening. I've noticed Kate just posted in chat that people on Elder Scrolls Online chat, that's in-game chat, are saying that some of them got it and some of them didn't. I assume that's possibly because they exist in Tamriel, and in Tamriel there are no mobile phones. It's a different form of magic. It's basically when Mephala, the Spider Queen,
no one cares. Something.
Okay, fine. Let us know what your experience was. Did you scare an animal unintentionally? Were you in a shop where everyone reached for their phone at the very same time? Hopefully it restarted, if so. But let us know your views. It would be great to have some experiences. If you've got any recordings of it, that is the level of nerd that we are on this show. We will take those recordings and we will play them out. So just tell us. And if you learn of any interesting stories from friends and family, you can send them to us too. It'll make next week's show even easier for us to put together. Anything else on this, Ian, before I press interstitial 0.wav?
Kate says that she cares about Elder Scrolls Online. As smooth as Bruce the dog. Nate, it seems like mobile phone ownership is growing in the under 16s. That's according to an Ofcom report, which has alarmed some people, apparently. A campaign group, which I'm refusing to name because it supports loads of other conspiracy-based nonsense, has suggested it would like to see an outright ban on phones for the under 16s. To which I say, Ofcom's Children's Media and Attitudes Report 2023 suggests that we are raising a nation of YouTube addicts. 88% of 3 to 17 year olds visit the site, and 96% of that age group watch video online in some form. Astonishing numbers in the report continue, Nate. Apparently 25% of 3 and 4 year olds use WhatsApp, which seems staggering.
Yeah.
Mostly they're using their phones for some sort of online activity. I guess that means things like WhatsApp and YouTube. It doesn't break it down in that particular way. But gaming is only 27% of the use. TV around 36%, and 41% is the online bit. So that's, I guess, everything else. Parents increasingly struggle to keep their kids off devices. 30% said they found controlling use hard. But it's not all bad news, though, because 3 and 4 year olds are still spending more time playing with toys than they do online, spending 101 minutes in the real world and only 38 minutes in video games, apparently. By age 17, almost all children have a phone. It says the exact number is around 99%, and 96% have some sort of online profile. I assume that means like a social media thing,
yeah,
etc. Other interesting numbers in that group in the up to 17s would be Facebook, including Messenger, being down year on year. That's 34%. Now down from 40. Instagram's steady at 41%. TikTok is up, no surprise there, from 50 to 53%. And interestingly, the overall use of YouTube is down 1% year on year. But that's probably likely to be because of TikTok, maybe. So, Nate, 3 and 4 year olds on the WhatsApps. What a weird situation.
This is the thing. Ian and I were talking about this report. It's one of the rare times where I would actually say it's really worth going through this whole report and skimming for things that are relevant to you, a lot of the time these reports are just really quite dull and tedious. But it's this one, and we'll have a link to it in the show notes at uktechshow.com. There are some really quite surprising figures in here, because I sort of feel like you can kind of hazard a guess about the amount of time that a 16-year-old spends on a phone and what they're looking at. I think you could probably, most people could hazard a pretty accurate guess as to what's going on there. But if you'd have asked me, what does the average 3-year-old do with a mobile phone? I don't honestly think I couldn't have begun to tell you. And I wouldn't have guessed it was as high as this. And it's amazing. There's so many interesting figures here. There's a section in here, 3 to 4s, parental oversight, setting them apart from parents of older children. 65% of parents of children aged 3 to 4 said they supervised what their child does online by sitting there with them and watching them. That then means that 35% of parents of children aged 3 to 4 are not supervising what their 3 to 4-year-old is doing online. At least that's the implicit
suggestion. Well, maybe not directly, but there are other ways. For example, like not letting them, install certain apps or, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, there are other ways. And YouTube Kids is pretty good. Like, I'm not saying it doesn't have its issues, but at least it does enable you to set up a profile that's age appropriate for kids, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Given that they're all doing it, basically.
Yeah. Let me see, what else have we got in here? Half.
I thought the gaming number was interesting, actually. Gaming's down quite a bit on phones or tablets, dropping from 63% in 2021 to 50% in 2022. That's interesting, right?
Yeah. Kate in our live chat says, my colleague brings her 4-year-old to work sometimes when the teachers are striking, etc., and he just watches YouTube all day and plays games.
I mean, I've got to admit that my son does do a lot of YouTubing.
Half of 3 to 4-year-olds, were reported by the parent or guardian in the survey to have used apps or sites to send messages or make video and voice calls. Those who did mainly used WhatsApp and FaceTime. Huh. So, I don't know. I don't know why. Maybe I shouldn't be finding this so surprising. I just did not think.
No, I think it is surprising.
I found
the WhatsApp thing incredible. I mean, that to me, because one of the things that you'll realise when you have a young child around you, and you've met my kids, so you know what they're like. The other day, my daughter was staying with me, and all she said all day was, "I'm the real Ice Spice." And my son, I don't know. Ice Spice is some rapper or internet celebrity.
She doesn't come across as a rapper, your daughter.
She's not, but it's just the sort of, it's difficult to explain. You probably remember doing it when you were a kid. You know, you fixate on one thing and wear it down to irritating levels.
Yes.
She also called Bob, what was it, a salty sea, I can't remember what it was now. It was pretty funny. Anyway, but if you give WhatsApp to younger children, I mean, particularly 3 to 4, you know, my son's older than that now, so he doesn't fall to this group, but it would be chaos expecting them to communicate, and all you would get is poop emojis and silliness. So I don't know.
That's all you get from Elon
exactly...
Musk, so
that's literally true.
Exactly. I wasn't joking.
He is a 3-year-old. No, I mean, I'm sure you weren't. He's literally a 3-year-old.
If you email the press email for Twitter, you get an automatic response that is just a
which you also
emoji.
Have to do. If you're
as a journalist,
you
have
to
do
email
it.
Them and ask.
Yeah,
but I mean, it's a waste of time because there is no press department there. Anyway, go on, carry on.
A little later in this report, apparently, joke and prank or challenge videos start to become extremely popular once kids are aged about 5 to 7. That's where things turn from being just looking at colourful pictures to actively looking at something that is obviously designed to be a bit surreal, you know, with pranks. It's not just anything. It's specifically pranks at that age.
Yes, yes. And you'd be amazed at what they watch. Squashing things. They love cars running over things.
Fair.
You know, that's something that really appeals.
Jeremy Beadle used to bloody love that, to be fair, in the 90s.
Yeah, that's very true. And my son just loves watching other people play games. Some of them, games he's got. Like, he's allowed to play Fortnite now. He watches people play Fortnite. I'm like, mate, why don't you just play Fortnite?
That's not a new thing, I'm afraid to say. That's not new. That's a very, very big deal. And I do that. I've watched people play games. Sometimes, I actually, on my home media server, I have several what are called long plays, where it's just a screen recording, no commentary, no effects, no anything, of somebody playing through the story portions of very long games. And I do kind of find them a little bit relaxing in a weird sort of way.
I'm not actually saying I don't disagree with it. I mean, I've got to admit, I've watched some people play games. So, you know, I used to watch Destiny people play games. So, yeah, you know, I get it. But it's not something I spend a lot of time on. And, you know, I'd almost rather my son was playing a game than watching a game being played. Because at least one of them requires sort of coordination and thinking and strategizing and, you know, engagement. Whereas watching a video is just an entirely passive application of life.
Captain Kremen in live chat says, in the olden days, we had to put our own pennies on the train tracks to watch things getting squished. There is something satisfying about watching something being run over. I mean, not
it's
a person,
true.
But like...
I did used to enjoy that the YouTube channel that had a big press, and they would press things, and they would then be squashed or explode. And there was Will It Blend back in the day.
Will It Blend, yeah.
And that was an internet sensation amongst people our age who were adults at the time.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I mean, I do love watching things being squashed. Also love things being exploded, but only if in slow motion. High-speed cameras have made for fantastic viewing.
Big slow-mo guys fan?
I've certainly watched a hell of a lot of their stuff, yeah, over the years. I don't subscribe to them, but...
What?
No, I don't subscribe to a lot of things, just...
Well, you're not
drummers.
Really a Google account sort of person, are you, really?
I mean, I have a Google account, and in fact, so do a hell of a lot of four-year-olds, in fact.
Oh,
It says here, I just saw this number when I was scanning for something else, actually. It said... let me see, was it page 20, I think, here? It was something like, oh yeah, here we are, just under 2/5 of 3 to 4 year olds, so 38% specifically, have their own profile on YouTube of 3 to 4 year olds. So if that's not a breach of terms of service, I don't know what
is. Well, it absolutely is. Yeah. I don't know what people are thinking. I mean, again, I'm loath to condemn it though, because I always think about, you know, what it was like when we were kids, and that some of the things that we did were not necessarily, you know, bad, but they were, you know, I was on CompuServe chat rooms when I, well, you know, I am. That's how this works. I was on internet chat rooms, you know, at 15, 16, whatever, you know, running up huge phone bills. And, you know, without much parental supervision and doing, you know, stuff online, it's one of those things where I kind of feel like it's how people learn what they want to do with their lives. And, you know, that was the basis of our careers. So I am sort of a bit more flexible with my kids than I should be. But, like, I want to see where they go and, you know, what interests them, because I feel like, you know, the more you do and see, the more likely you are to pick a career that really suits you rather than just falling into something that you might be able to do but actually don't enjoy.
That's very, very true, and that's certainly the case for me as well. Definitely, you know, most of that. It's funny, I was talking to Kate earlier about workloads and people who pretend they're busier than they actually are in order to seem interesting. And I remember when I was about 15, I would sign up for hundreds of email newsletters. I mean, we're talking like 1998, 78 territory sort of thing at this point. Just so I had an excuse to go downstairs to my mum and say, and just look all flustered because I've just got so much email to deal with, just so much to do. And it was all like music about bands that I hate, but it was just the very thrill of having a bulging inbox that just gave me a great deal of excitement.
I suppose getting an email would have been exciting back then. We certainly did a fair bit of that. I mean, I must have told you the story about the time when we met. Well, I was chatting to some people who claimed to be American cheerleaders online, and then we decided that we would become pen pals.
Oh, May. I used to have to put messages on helium balloons to get pen friends.
Well, this is the thing, right? Though, I mean, obviously, it didn't really go anywhere, and we were a bit. Like, I was a bit older by that point. I think this is when I would have been, like, 16, 17, maybe. And I couldn't be bothered because they wanted to write letters. And I was like, I don't want to write letters. I want to be on the internet. It didn't really make a lot of sense. I don't know why you would go online, meet somebody, and then send them a letter. Like, you've got an electronic form of that. Who knows?
Well, that's great. But you can meet some wonderful people doing that way. I met somebody...
Well, they may or may not have been cheerleaders, so...
I met a girl who at the time I think was 13 and I was about 15 in a chat room. Don't worry, this is not a bad conversation. I know there's probably a lot of conversations on the internet that start out like that and end up in jail. But we were chatting in like an MSN chat room and we are still in touch to this very day and have never met. Her name's Lisa and she lives in Kansas. And
that's amazing. And you're still speaking to her.
We still, yeah, I mean, not on a regular basis, but in general, yes.
That's pretty cool. And we have
never met, ever.
Yeah, I mean, I've not met a lot of the people that I play games like Destiny with people who I've never actually met, and they're great. So, you know, it doesn't, I think it's a gift in a way. I mean, obviously we have to be cognizant of all the problems that come with online bullying, but for the most part, people are not horrible, and meeting people online is fantastic.
Yeah, it certainly can be. Well, let us
as
know
long
how
as you're sensible enough to control when you do and don't meet people. Marta's taking us all axe throwing.
Well, we've been axe throwing with Marta before
well,
now.
And we will again.
Yeah, and my axe. Right, well, if you'd like to axe us any questions about this, if you'd like to hurl an opinion about it at us, you can do all of those things, not in a very safely controlled environment in East London. You just simply fire us an email, hello@uktechshow.com. And if you want to go axe throwing with Marta, then you're just going to have to become
I
her.
I don't know if it's fair to offer that as a service. Marta's a very busy lady.
She is, but we all need friends.
You can't take our entire listenership axe throwing.
If anyone could, I bet it's Marta. Thanks everyone for supporting us, however you are doing. We had a lovely review recently come in that I just...
We
did, and I haven't got it to hand to read, but it was very...
Shall I get it whilst you do this bit?
Oh, if you would, that would be great. Because I just wanted to thank our patrons who are getting the live version of the show and extended versions and on demand and all that kind of stuff ad-free. If you would like to become one of them, and there's a whole load of them in our chat today. Who have we got in our live chat? We've got Captain Kremen, Charlotte, we've got Kate, Luna, Mark, Martolio, we've got Nick, Rich and Russ, Rich, Bruce. Basically, there's a lot of people called Rich at the moment, which is great because it's better than having... No, I don't know where I'm going with that. Sorry. But you can join them. patreon.com/UK Tech. Go on, Ian.
Ratings and reviews. This is from iTunes, I expect. Real world UK tech news from Simple Space. There's very little coverage of UK technology news and issues. All the major tech companies and their associated press releases are well represented in the tech press and in a plethora of podcasts. This is a blunt, insightful and funny podcast between two very knowledgeable hosts covering real world news and issues in the UK. What a lovely and genuinely quite touching message. I really enjoyed that, as I said to you at the time.
He did. Thank you, Simple Space. And thanks to anyone who leaves us a review. It helps people discover the show, which is, as hosts of a show, something we greatly appreciate. If you are, however, a patron, you're about to hear our third discussion story this week, probably one of the ones I'm most excited about in many weeks, because we're going to talk about the surprising world of the very small mobile virtual network operators in the UK. Things like Superdrug Mobile and EcoTalk. Heard of them? Nope, I hadn't either, but apparently there's a lot of them. We had a friend write in. I say a friend, never met them. Patron Raphael wrote about a few things, but did comment on the drone thing. So this is the story we talked about last week with the drones hovering over motorways in Britain, spying on passengers and drivers and such things. He points out something that neither of us picked up on. Can't these things fly for about 20 minutes max? It would be a pretty short-lived thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is about right, yes.
That's a good point. So even if you were being chased down by one of these things over a motorway, just drive for 21 minutes and you're probably fine.
Do you want any reaction? Apparently Twitter's reacted to the emergency alert.
Oh, please.
So you can imagine what the quality of this is going to be like. This is from the BBC story about tracking it live for some reason. Some people on Twitter were underwhelmed by the emergency alert, if that's a thing. John Eldon tweeted, "What is it? It sounded like they were going to announce tuppence off cabbages at Lidl. Well, that's going by the sound my husband's phone made. Mine didn't go off at all." James McKerney wrote, 3 p.m. test at 14:59 with a laughing emoji. And Donna tweeted, "Was that it?" So the public is unimpressed by the emergency alerts, Nate. What will we do? Poor us.
John says, a sign here, many people received the alert at 2:59 p.m. on Sunday, yes. A minute earlier than planned.
I mean, imagine the shock on their faces.
304, Captain Kremen says, 304 here had it disabled and didn't get it. So I know I can turn nonsense off. Yay. Much like this podcast. Well, this one, not the one I'm introducing now, which is Tom Merritt's podcast, Daily Tech News Show. Here's what he's been talking about in the wider world of tech this week.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, we explain why the failure of Netflix's Love is Blind live stream on Sunday was a good thing. Annalie Newitz explains why Mastodon feels like home. An update on how AI is helping farmers target weeds while saving them money and making plants healthier to eat. How we can preserve our sanity in the face of supercharged misinformation from machines. And why AI won't take your job. It's just too damn expensive to run. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
And if you listen to Daily Tech News Show this coming week, you'll hear someone you know quite well. Yeah, me.
Oh, it's you.
Yeah, I'll be on this week. In fact, I'm also doing This Week in Tech today.
Oh, wow.
At the time we speak.
Is this a promotional tour you're on for your new AI show that you've never mentioned?
Ah, thank you. Do you mean, are you doing some promotion for a TV show? thanks for asking me, Ian. Yes, what a great opportunity. God. To say that episode one of AI IRL went out this week and you should all watch it. It's brilliant. You should all go and watch that. And if you have...
Yeah,
thanks.
You should. It is good. I haven't watched it all yet, but no. I will get to it. It's... I should do that later, actually. I'll do it today. What a nice Sunday. It's a 30-minute thing, is it?
It is, yeah.
That's a lot of watching. Watch it, though.
It's a lot of Nate.
Do you... Because this is what used to happen with Emma Barnett's show, is that it would just randomly turn up on Bloomberg and I'd watch it there. So I assume I can do that. If I watch enough Bloomberg, it'll pop up eventually.
Well, it does. It broadcasts live every Wednesday, but it would not live.
Well,
is it?
Live.
It's on TV every Wednesday, it's but you can watch it on .com and on YouTube. And...
Yeah, but I want to catch it accidentally and be excited, because it's exciting when you accidentally see someone you know.
Yes, well, you'll just have to watch it on a Wednesday
on the
evening.
Internet. I'll put it on YouTube. Are there adverts? There will be, weren't there? God, I hate YouTube. You know, I started watching a YouTube video the other day, and within the first 1 minute of it, it had got cut back from the original pre-roll adverts, 1 minute of content, and then another two adverts. They were the same as the first ones. So if I hadn't got the message the first time, I would be unlikely to absorb it the second time, right? You should have run the end music over this.
I pressed the outro button, Ian. Go.
You should watch Nate's show, really. He's very good.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.